Thanks for joining us on a rare Thursday afternoon edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are talking Nets Raptors and why Jared Allen is going to be really good, why Joe Harris should start over Allen Crabbe, and a bunch of other fire takes from the Nets blowout preseason loss in Montreal to the Toronto Raptors. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Nets. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to host this, a Nets micropod covering the Brooklyn Nets every single day of the week. Most weeks. Some weeks. On occasion, every single day of the week. And I am not joined by anybody because I decided to record this on a Thursday afternoon. And Josh has something called a full-time job, whatever that is. Sounds stupid. Anyways, we are talking Nets basketball. The Nets fell to the Toronto Raptors in the only game this season that's going to be played in Montreal, 118-91. I've been to Montreal before. It was pretty nice. It was a long time ago. Probably 12 years ago, about. I remember having a great croissant. That was really memorable. But the rest of the food was just awful. And I'm shocked because Montreal has a pretty good reputation as a food city. All right, enough of that. Anyways, the Nets shot it really well in the first half. I think they were up by as many as like 12 or 14 in half number one. Toronto posed a furious comeback, and it didn't even seem like they were necessarily playing that hard. It was more so that they were just clearly a lot better than the Nets. I'll get to this a little bit more later, but Danny Green was just ridiculous. The Nets kept giving him open shots, and he finished with 22 points, 4 rebounds, 5 steals, 6 of 7 from 3-point range. And then in the second half, the Nets went a full quarter, or it was about a full quarter, without making a field goal. Maybe they had one in there, but I'm pretty sure they went a full quarter without hitting a field goal, which is obviously not conducive to winning against a team that I think is going to win 60 games this season. But again, preseason, second to last game, doesn't matter all that much. What does matter is what we saw from the guys on the court on an individual level. Jared Allen, he was really, really good, and he's going to be really good. Again, I hesitate to project a definite learning, or I guess progress curve for him, just because he was so late to playing basketball, and I thought that excellent feature Bleacher Report had on him this summer really it was eye-opening, just in the sense of how little he played going into college. Like he obviously was on his high school team, but I think he played all 4 years. I'm not 100% sure he did, but he never really took basketball super seriously until his last year and a half of high school. It wasn't like he was going to camps every summer. He didn't have a personal trainer like so many guys who are going to end up being far worse than him have, starting at like age 6 or 7. And to me, that just imbues him with such an upside. The fact that he hasn't gotten that type of training, like, what is he going to do with arguably one of the top 5 to 10 or so best player development staffs in all of basketball in Brooklyn? And I think already in year two, his second full offseason as a Net, you're starting to see it. He looked a lot more powerful than he did last season. There was a play where he spun and just put a shoulder right into Serge Ibaka, and Serge Ibaka backed up a little bit. And his rookie year, Allen wouldn't even try moves like that because he just couldn't physically generate enough power to move guys. But, and not that Ibaka's a giant, but he is a built dude, and obviously quite a bit older than Allen is. And Jarrett was able to move him, and that was really exciting as a part of his game, because it provides kind of a natural complement to the finesse part of his game that was already really, really good in the second half of last season. His instinctual ability to pivot off defenders, to spin, to pump fake, to use his length to his advantage. That was really exciting. And then just his ability to finish around the basket, obviously never something we really took for granted last year, but it was just so impressive in this game. And I think the extra summer of full-time NBA-level weight work is really showing, because if anything, he looks even more explosive than last season, which is frankly just a really scary prospect for teams. Obviously, when you think of like the best rim rollers in modern NBA history, Dwight Howard's the first name that comes to mind. Obviously, Howard, just a freak of an athlete, probably on a level higher than, at least in his prime, than what Allen is ever going to get to. But Dwight Howard's only like 6'9", 6'10". Jared Allen, a legit 6'11", 7-footer. That combination of size of athleticism, even in a league such as the NBA, where like every year there seems to be another just freak coming into the league, like he's kind of unique, because I just think most of the really, really great jumpers, even at the center position, are just a little bit shorter than Allen is. That combination is just astounding. And there was one play where the shot clock's running down. Allen comes out to set a screen for Dinwiddie with like 4 seconds left. Dinwiddie is like 4 feet beyond the three-point line, and I'm just thinking, what are you doing? What are you doing? There's no way this ends positively for the Nets. And then Dinwiddie with like 4 seconds left bursts towards the basket, throws this lob up to Allen. I can't remember who the defender was, but he read it pretty much perfectly, got back on Allen, and Allen just skies over him and just volleyball tips the ball into the basket. That was amazing. There was another play that, for my money, might have been the play of the game. Joe Harris dribbling, gets it out on the three-point line, draws two defenders because he's open for three for a second, slips his beautiful bounce pass to a diving Allen. Defender rushes to meet him at the rim. Allen just double pumps, dunks it, and just eviscerates the guy. So those two, the chemistry between those two is really exciting. And with that, I'd like to throw a bone to my guy Joe Harris. I just think he should start this season. I know I've seen a lot of people say that on Reddit. I said it at different points last year. And it's maybe that's not fair to Allen Crabbe, because we really only saw him play one preseason game where he didn't necessarily impress that much, but no one from the Nets was all that good in their first game against the New York Knicks. But I, again, just not knowing if Crabbe is a dramatically different player this year, which maybe he is, I just think Harris is just flat out better. He's a better shooter, better ball mover. Defensively, and I think this is part of the reason Crabbe starts, you can make the argument that the upside is greater there just because of his superior size, but I think practically Harris is a better defender because he just brings it every night, and he doesn't necessarily have the flash plays that Crabbe occasionally makes, like those help side blocks, those big steals, but he's just so much more consistent, and Crabbe doesn't have enough of those explosive plays to really justify him starting over Harris. And it's kind of the same argument offensively. Like, obviously Crabbe had those flashes at the end of last season that were really, really exciting, but if he can't do it on a game-to-game basis, it's not irrelevant, but I think you take the consistency that Harris brings to the table, and I think the extra little bit of juice that Harris brings as a ball mover is really important. We saw that in the combination between him and Jared Dudley, those two both starting and both being superior passers to the guys who are probably going to start in that spot during the regular season, Crabbe and then either Damari Carroll or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, depending on if Caris LeVert starts. I just like having the extra ball movement in there. And again, maybe it hurts you a little bit defensively over the long run, but I just think it's the way to go. And I'm fascinated to see if Crabbe hypothetically misses the first couple games of the season and Joe Harris comes out and plays really well. To be fair, he did not shoot the ball particularly well tonight. But if he comes out the first few games of the regular season, looks really good, I think you could justify starting him over Crabbe pretty easily. All right, that wraps up our first segment on this solo edition of Locked On Nets. When we come back, we'll talk about Caris LeVert's off-ball defense, maybe a little more on Jared Dudley being really good for this team, Kenneth Laried showing off a varied offensive game, and the rookies from some crazy part of Europe. Next on Locked On Nets.
Locked On NFL is becoming everyone's favorite daily national NFL podcast. Mondays, it's the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. Tuesdays, former NFL QB Sage Rosenfels joins Matt Williamson. Wednesday, it is Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus. Thursdays, it is the great Mike Sando of ESPN. And Friday, get Matt's picks only on Locked On NFL.
Peak ticket season in New York is fast approaching, and we know that you want to be a part of it. The NFL is in full swing. The Yankees are getting ready for a playoff run, and hockey and basketball are just around the corner. And there's no better option to get a great deal on attending any of those events than Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats allows you to sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for $20 off orders of $200 or more to save you even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Then use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. That's LOCKEDON. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Thanks for joining us back on the Locked On Nets podcast, talking the Toronto Raptors 118-91 victory over the Brooklyn Nets. Again, I am your solo host, Gavin Shaw. We just finished talking through Jared Allen's 24-point, 4-rebound performance in 25 minutes. I don't even think I mentioned the stats in the last second. That's really impressive right off the bat. He was 8 for 12 from the field, 1 of 1 from 3-point range, 7 of 8 from the foul line. He looks to be really, really good. Yeah, we've finished talking about him. I'm so obsessed with Jared Allen, I just lose track of thought anytime I bring him up. Let's get into Caris LeVert a little bit. He had his worst game of the preseason. Oh, actually, he salvaged it a little bit in the second half, but still, 13 points, 5 of 13 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3. Basically did nothing when Kawhi Leonard was in the game. Like, he didn't even want to challenge Leonard, and that's a testament to, I guess, both the respect Leonard still commands even after missing a full season, and probably suggestive of the fact that he's, even in this preseason limited mode, a really, really great defensive player. And then so LeVert padded that a little bit in garbage time, but he did have those three steals, and that's kind of what I want to focus on, just his ability to shoot gaps defensively. Obviously, it was quality we saw last season, but there's been so much talk about the work he put into his lower body and just figuring out a way to become even more explosive for this 2018-19 year. And you can really see it on that end of the floor. He's just splitting up pass after pass after pass, constantly getting his hands in passing lanes. And it's a quality you just don't see all that often at the NBA level, to be genuinely dynamic defensively, just because the guys offensively are so good and so smart. You don't necessarily have the same opportunities you do in college to make plays on that end of the floor. The fact that LeVert, against one of the, I'd say, pettier passing teams in the league in Toronto, for him to make those types of plays, that's really, really encouraging. And I think he could be a game breaker on that side of the floor, because I'm not sure if there's quite as, maybe a back-breaking three, but the steal into the breakaway dunk is one of the greatest momentum-changing plays in basketball. And I think LeVert has a chance to produce one or two of them every single game. All right, let's talk about Jared Dudley, who is aptly nicknamed Poutine by my college friend, Jonathan Diego, who got the pleasure of seeing him in his second Phoenix tenure. Dudley's really good for this team, and I'm kind of glad I had this safe space to talk about him now without Josh shooting me down. I think he is honestly the most skilled big they have right now, and you could make a case if he really should be playing the big. I've stood next to him. He's definitely not taller than 6'6", probably more like 6'5". But he still has some game, and he just athletically, he doesn't look anywhere close to an NBA player. He genuinely, there are points where it's like, oh my God, like, how is he still in the league? But then you just see it, it feels like he hits every semi-contested three-pointer. His shot is so good. He's genuinely one of the three best shooters on the team alongside Crabbe and Joe Harris. And I think he's pretty easily the best passing big on the team. He makes really quick decisions. I know Sarah Kustak was quick to point out he doesn't always make the easy pass when you're pinging it around the floor. And obviously, I think that was a little bit of an issue for the Nets last season. They were really unselfish, and they create kind of advantages, whether it was D'Lo, Dinwiddie, or LeVert breaking down a defense. They'd create an advantage. They'd start swinging the ball around the perimeter. And again, those are like kind of the beautiful sequences in the NBA that you really look forward to, and the sequences that usually lead to a good shot. But at some point, someone has to make an unexpected pass, because you just keep swinging it, and each guy is one step ahead of the defender. Eventually, you're going to shoot, and the defender is going to be right in the guy's face. And you get a semi-open shot, and sometimes they might go in, but it's not necessarily a high-quality look. To generate a really high-quality look, the initial guy either has to get so open that he just draws a defender off a corner three-point shooter, or you need someone to make a great pass in that sequence. And I think Dudley is one of the few players on this team capable of making that really smart pass. Instead of just swinging it into the near corner, maybe shooting the ball cross-court into the far corner, and you get a guy wide open for a three-pointer because the defender was further away in help, not thinking that Dudley was capable of making that pass. It's just little plays like that that really help an offense, really help everyone feel more involved, and make Dudley kind of the ultimate glue guy at this point in his career, and it's moments like that that make me think he's going to be really relevant on this team. And the guy he's competing with is Kenneth Faried, who made his Nets debut last night, and he was solid. He showed off a really nice offensive game. He was solid around the basket, showed off his trademark energy, made an 18-footer, had a nice little drive to the rim that I know Atkinson mentioned. The on-the-floor game was something he's added over the last few years, and Josh and I were kind of in disbelief because we'd never really seen that from him before, but it was certainly apparent in this one, so I'm excited about him offensively. I think he'll have his troubles on the defensive end, though he was pretty good in this one. And again, I think he's an injury away from being a part of this rotation. I just think Dudley's skill set, even if in a vacuum, he's not as good of a player as for Reed at this point, just makes him overall more valuable to this team and makes him more likely to have a role in the rotation. But I am genuinely interested, once the regular season starts, as we mentioned in all these preseason podcasts, how this rotation shapes up, because there are just so many different questions. One of them is, are the rookies going to play? Rodions Karukes, John and Musa, both got quite a bit of time in this one. And this game further solidified my evolving opinion that was the exact opposite of my opinion all offseason. Anytime someone had me on a podcast to talk about the Nets, I would always talk about Musa, and I wouldn't even mention Karukes. And I think I had it the wrong way around, because Karukes genuinely looks more ready to play. And there are just some flashes on both ends of the floor of him being explosive, which I really didn't expect. I know Kenny Atkinson, I think broadcasters have used this quote in consecutive games, has said that Karukes is a lot further along athletically than he expected him to be. And again, you see it on both ends of the floor. He beats guys off the dribble. He's pretty quick defensively. There were a few times he had missed plays on that end of the floor. But he just looks like he belongs in an NBA game. And you combine that with his size and the shooting ability, I guess, is more theoretical at this point, because he has not shot the ball well from the perimeter in the preseason. But again, he just looks like he belongs out there. So I'm intrigued. My gut feeling is he's an injury away from playing. But just the fact that he's ahead of Musa is a really good sign for him. And Musa also showed some flashes. He had a dirty crossover on DeLon Wright. I don't want to exaggerate it, because he ended it with a floater, and it was on DeLon Wright versus the greatest player of all time. But it was slightly reminiscent of AI on Michael Jordan. It was a really, really cool moment. And you don't, I don't know. I think it's just because defenders are better. You see guys like Kyrie put together like these insane, and Harden as well, just put together these insane dribbling sequences, and that's kind of how they break guys down. Usually, I kind of miss just the one dribble crossover as a means of getting by a defender, and Musa flashed it and just destroyed DeLon Wright. DeLon Wright got him back immediately on the next play, and Musa, as much as Karukes struggled on defensive points, Musa had major, major issues on that end of the floor, and there were a lot of times where he just got manhandled offensively and had the ball ripped away from him. Again, like Karukes, he looks maybe a little nervous shooting the ball, not necessarily in rhythm yet, and both of them, well, I mean, again, Karukes to a lesser degree, but Musa was a guy who's kind of used to having the ball in his hands a lot, and it's tough to make that transition to being a role player on an NBA team where you don't necessarily get to handle the ball all that often. Both had issues traveling on pump fakes in Europe. I think they are a little bit more lenient about that. They let you pump and kind of start taking a step before you put the ball down. That doesn't fly in the old USA, so that was a little bit of an issue for the two of them. All right, we'll finish this up with some scattered thoughts on the game next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
Locked On NBA never went away, and it's still here for you every day. Locked On NBA is your daily national NBA podcast. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories, and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long with daily 30-minute episodes on everything going on in the league. Follow for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA.
Welcome back. Final segment, Locked On Nets. Some scattered thoughts. Let's start with the Toronto Raptors, because I made them one of my best bets in Eastern Conference over-unders. I'm really excited about watching them play this year. Danny Green, again, was just incredible. It really gave me flashbacks to the 2013 finals, where I think he might have broken the record for most three-pointers ever made in a series. I can't remember if Ray Allen or someone got it the next year, obviously. By now, I assume Stephen Clay probably traded off every single season, but he was just crazy. It was that classic Danny Green, super high-arcing, just gorgeous three-ball that in recent years with San Antonio, I feel like every time I turn on a Spurs game, he'd be taking that shot, and it would always just rim out, and I was like kind of bummed, because he was really one of my favorite players, that he had taken a step back. It would be so great if the change of scenery really did him some good, just because I think that really takes Toronto's upside to just another level, to add in another genuinely great shooter and 3-and-D guy with Kawhi, because that was even around like the three aging stars, like that
combination was, I think, the backbone of the unit that beat Miami. Don't forget, Green was the guy guarding Dwayne Wade in those series. Kawhi was guarding LeBron. Again, those were two guys who won an NBA Finals series, came within a freak play of winning another. And now they join this Eastern Conference juggernaut that won, I think, did they win 60 games last year? Anyways, they were, I mean, by scoring margin, like one of the best Eastern Conference teams in recent memory. And to me, it just makes Toronto's upside really insane. Defensively, they are just freakish. I said before, like, the Nets won a full quarter without getting a field goal. Like, once they, like, turned it up a little bit, they were just absolutely hounding on that end of the floor. And there were little flashes of that next year. But you see increased physicality from their younger guys, all of them a year older, obviously, and a year stronger. And then you mix in Kawhi and Danny Green, again, two of the best perimeter defenders in basketball. And they are just going to lock teams down. I think, depending on how much they play Jonas Valanciunas this year, who will hold them back a little bit just because he's not great around the basket, I think they have a chance to be the best defense in basketball. And the team that will compete with them is obviously Boston. And I think Toronto-Boston has a chance to be the best Eastern Conference final series we've seen in maybe the last decade. Obviously, Cleveland-Boston had some good runs. The Miami-Boston ones were a lot of fun. Miami-Indiana was semi-intriguing, though I always kind of felt like in the back of my head, Miami sort of had Indiana's number. Cleveland hasn't really had a ton of competition over the last few years. I think Toronto-Boston, if everyone is mostly healthy, I think it could be really, really epic. Just from a broadcasting side, it was nice to have Ryan Rucco and Sarah Kustak back in my life. I just loved, like, the genuine joy. Like, you could, I think Ryan had a joke at some point about Sarah, who said she does not have Netflix, which is just strange. just spending all of her time watching basketball, reading books about basketball, only using candles around, like, a dimly lit apartment. And she, like, all but confirmed that is genuinely her life. So it's just nice to have that little bit of chemistry back from them. They showed some funny pictures of Ryan, again, friend of the pod, on vacation in Italy. So it was just great. Great to have both of them back. I'm super excited to have Ian Eagle on a game, and I assume it'll come in the Nets opener. Speaking of Netflix, the Nets have a promotion called Netflix and Chill. That's it. I'm not going to say anything more about that. Make of that what you will. And then my final one, we end on a little bit of a dour note. Spencer Dinwiddie complaining to Michael Grady in an interview about not winning Most Improved Player last season, I think it's just so stupid. I think it's, like, a little bit below the Nets to even broadcast that. Like, I get why you do it. Like, if a player, like, is going to come out and say that, like, you have to put it on air. But I just don't think it's really a good look for Dinwiddie. And he described himself as just a all-star level point guard. And I think that was, I was saying that early in the season. I do think that was true for part of the season. But you look what happened towards the end. Dinwiddie shot under 39% from the field last season. He shot under 33% from three. He just wasn't efficient at all. And he was disastrously inefficient in the second half of the year. And he was talking about how Victor Oladipo didn't improve all that much because he was good early in his career. Oladipo, even early in his career, he was solid, he was good, but he was like a slightly above average player, and he went from that to being one of the top 10 guys in the league last year. You could argue he had a top 5 season last year. I don't think he's a top 5 player in basketball, but you could argue his two-way impact was one of the 5 to 10 best in the entire NBA last season. He was really just that good. And even guys like, I don't know, there were other candidates that I think you could make a case. Like, even guys on his own team, like, I think Joe Harris might have been more improved than Spencer Dinwiddie was. And obviously, like, Dinwiddie's argument is that he went from being a deep bench guy to arguably the best player on the team. And that's legitimate, but I don't know. I just don't think he shot the ball well enough to really have an argument at having won Most Improved last year. And the fact that he's complaining about it again just a season later, I don't know. Not a good look. If it motivates him, if it gets him going, great. Obviously, I still think Dinwiddie, great guy, great player. So no long-term complaints. I just thought that was a little petty. All right, that wraps up this edition of Locked On Nets. I think we'll be back probably Saturday morning to talk Knicks-Nets, and then maybe we'll put out one more Sunday. I'm not sure yet, but we'll definitely have one for you this weekend. So tune in for that on Locked On Nets. Until then, have a great weekend. We'll see you soon.